Thank you. The presentation today that I'm going to give is Influenza Communication in Michigan, how existing partnerships were utilized and strengthened during the 2009 flu pandemic. To start with, I wanted to give an overview of flu vaccine communication in Michigan at the Michigan Department of Community Health, or MDCH. And as I'm sure with a lot of other states, we work closely with other departments and divisions on flu communication. We work closely with our Office of Public Health Preparedness on risk communication and emergency preparedness. We work with our Communicable Disease Department with disease reporting and surveillance. We also work with our Bureau of Labs. But for the purpose of this presentation, I'm going to strictly talk about flu vaccine communication, and this is from the immunization division perspective. So if you follow those blue boxes down, you can see that within the division of immunization, there's three main areas where flu vaccine communication is developed. It's in our Vaccines for Children program, in education, outreach, and surveillance, and with our immunization registry. And of course, within each of these divisions, there's different target groups similar to ACIP, including, you know, pregnant women, healthcare personnel, high-risk populations, and we also target messages from within these divisions to those populations as well. There are two main ways that we communicate to our stakeholders, including the public, providers, coalitions, et cetera. Either directly from the state level to the stakeholders, or a lot of times we'll use the local health departments as our frontline communicators. So there are a lot of existing partnerships that we had in Michigan that really helped us with the 2009 H1N1 response. The first is we had a flu education work group in place. And this was an internal group within the division. And we had representatives from multiple programs, including those that I showed on the last slide. And then we also had representatives from our adult program, from adolescent, from epidemiology. And this group has met regularly for quite some time. And in 2007, we had created a Flu Fighter Action Kit, which was a guide for healthcare organizations on the implementation of flu campaigns. And we also work at developing and updating flu education materials for both private and public audiences. And in addition, we work closely with our Flu Advisory Board, which I'm going to talk about on the next slide. So this Flu Advisory Board was created in 2004-05, and when the flu vaccine shortage happened. And currently, we have over 170 members from various organizations, from nurse associations, health systems, private medical practices, and so forth, you can see on the slide. And we have quarterly meetings, and what this really has done in past flu seasons and for the current H1N1 pandemic is it creates a communication infrastructure for internal policy makers and external stakeholders. And this last year, in 2009, we developed work groups for the Flu Advisory Board. And this was before the pandemic occurred, but we thought that one of the ways that we could make our meetings more effective and efficient is if we had breakout sessions at each of the work groups. So we had the following work groups. We had preschool and younger, children and adolescents, adults, healthcare personnel, non-vaccine interventions and antivirals. And that actually, the asterisk after it is because that became an ad hoc group, and then our group, vaccine distribution, supply, and ordering, it became more pertinent for that group to meet. So some of our specific goals in response to H1N1, which I think I've seen a similar version of the slide on multiple presentations here at NIC, but our goals really were to create consistent, coordinated messages, to provide timely, helpful, and accurate guidance, to utilize multiple communication channels to reach as many people as we could, and to try to be as transparent as we could throughout the process. Early on, as I said on that first slide, we coordinated efforts between the different Michigan Department of Community Health departments, and we set up regular meetings and conference calls. One was a weekly pandemic partners conference call where we had representatives from both the local and state health departments, in addition to Department of Education, our Bureau of Labs, Medicaid and Medicare, and different representatives. And what this was is we gave updates in addition to it kind of being a sounding board. The meat of a lot of the calls were the Q&A sessions at the end, and a lot of times the Division of Immunization had the most questions. Another thing that we did was created swineflu@michigan.gov, and one person would receive all these emails, and then they would send them out to different subject matter experts, and we would respond in a timely manner for this. This right here, we had an existing seasonal flu website with an abundance of materials on it. Our flu website really had materials for both the private and public, and we used a lot of these materials in order to develop H1N1 messages. And I think early on, within the first week or so of H1N1 occurring, we created a new H1N1 website. And then a little bit later, the Office of Public Health Preparedness hired a new staff person to maintain this website. And on the right there, you can see the graph. Early on in May, when we first developed the website, there were quite a few. Those are the number of hits to the homepage. So in May, we had quite a few people interested in coming to the homepage of the website. And then it waned a little bit. And then that first arrow points to the week of October 4th, when vaccine became available. So you can see an increase in interest. And then that went through. The second arrow is peak flu activity in Michigan. So you can see the interest after that subsided quite a bit. But overall, we've had over 250,000 hits to the website, and we had the peak number of hits, almost 30,000, on the week ending October 24th. Another thing within the website that we created was a 2009 H1N1 provider toolkit. And we created this as a one-stop shop for H1N1 immunization providers. And we used our model of an Alliance for Immunization Michigan toolkit to create this website. And what it did is it really provided consistent messages in one place for up-to-date guidance. Down at the bottom left, I know you probably can't read that, but what it says, it's a table of contents for what was included in our provider toolkit. So to go through it, we had different information on the program, on the ancillary supply kit, on our registry, on storage and handling, vaccine administration, vaccine safety and VAERS, liability protection, other immunization resources, and then influenza testing guidance. And then that breakdown on the right shows different documents that were in the ancillary supply kit table of contents. So I just wanted to show a little breakdown of that. And this really proved to be a great resource for both new and existing providers. In addition, it helped a lot of people within our department. Say, for example, if a different department received a phone call on what temperature the vaccine should be stored at, they could go to the provider toolkit and that information would have been there. Another resource that we had in place that we really utilized throughout the H1N1 pandemic was our Michigan Care Improvement Registry, or MICR. This has been used since 1998, and early on in Michigan, we decided that all providers were going to be required to use MICR to track and document administration and dispensing of vaccine and antivirals. And it really played a critical role in communication to both the providers and the public. Down on the bottom right is just a screenshot of a welcome screen. So when providers enrolled into MICR and they signed on, they would get a screenshot. This actually shows PCV13 because I took it last week, but when H1N1 was the hot topic, it would have all the updates for H1N1 there. Using the MICR, we also were able to upload our inventory from McKesson, and then we activated an all-hazards component as well, which I show on this slide here. You can see the drop-down menu has the different vaccine presentations. They could also fill out what target group the individual presenting was in, the lot number. So that's just a screenshot of the MICR. A couple other ways that we used our registry was for non-safety related recalls of vaccine. So we were able to very rapidly notify providers if they had affected lots in their inventory. I think by the time the last recall happened, within an hour, we were able to send out a spreadsheet telling which providers and what lots that they had in their inventory. And a way that we communicated with the public was that we generated reminder recall letters and sent them to the parents. This was sent to parents that had children at high risk for influenza-related complications, children needing a second dose for full coverage, or children that hadn't received a dose at all. And then another way that we're using it and continue to use it is assessment of coverage levels by local health department, age, and target group. So I'm sure most of us in this audience have been to numerous presentations on H1N1 or given numerous presentations on H1N1 in the last year. And we really utilized existing partnerships that we had to disseminate the most up-to-date information. This was either direct provider education in both private and public sectors. For example, two of our nurse educators, Joellen and Barb Wilicki, which are in the front row right here, they created a flu slide deck. And this was, I don't remember exactly how many slides it ended up being, but it served as a template so different people that were updating groups on what was going on with H1N1 could use our slide deck. And that way we were sending out consistent coordinated messages and the messages that we wanted out there. And then they could tailor the slide deck to their needs. We also gave presentations, office-based ones, and in grand rounds at coalitions on both the local and state level. And then in Michigan, we have 8 regional conferences that happen in the fall, and H1N1 was the hot topic at every single conference, and every single presentation was different at each conference, so that was a great way for us to communicate with the frontline providers. We gave presentations at our Michigan Advisory Committee on Immunizations, on the Flu Advisory Board meetings, and also to our 211 call centers who handled a lot of the initial responses. Another thing that we had in place was our Flu Bites newsletter. And this is a weekly newsletter that is sent in conjunction with our surveillance update, Michigan Flu Focus. And we directly distribute this to about 780 people, who in turn redistribute it to over 4,500 people. And in Flu Bites, what we tried to do is give a weekly snapshot of what was happening with flu. And as you know, there are multiple things that could be included in the newsletter in 1 week. So we tried to give a summary of journal articles with links to the abstracts or the full article if it was available. Any new guidance, recent news, and a lot of times the newsletter contained a lot of links because we couldn't keep up with everything. So if we linked to CDC, we knew the latest guidance, they would be linked to that. So another thing that we did was we sent out a flu communication survey, and this was a really brief 10-question survey via SurveyMonkey, and in all honesty, one of the reasons we did it is because this abstract got accepted for a presentation instead of a poster, so I figured I should collect some data. But the purpose was to really gain an understanding of the usefulness of flu bites, and then also to identify any strengths and weaknesses of our pandemic flu communication. And we directly distributed it to the same people that received the newsletter, so 780 people. Our response rate was about 18%, with over half from local health departments, about 15% from private practices, and 11% from the state health department. One of the questions we asked was, who was your primary source of information? And almost half said they went to the Michigan Department of Community Health for their information. About 38% went directly to CDC for their information, and 13% went to their local health departments. The slide's a little bit busy, but what we asked was what information was most useful. So down on the bottom, I asked them to rate how useful they found each of these sources. So the first one is email as new information is updated. And over 3/4 of the people thought that was extremely helpful. The second one is weekly newsletters. And then we have websites, which about 54% said that websites were extremely helpful. The next one is conference calls. And then about almost half, 43%, said that conference calls were extremely helpful. And then we also asked about webinars, television news stations, and internal updates within your organization. And what we can do with this is really use it for seasonal flu communication as well. Even though hopefully the messages won't have to be quite as timely as it was for H1N1, we know that if we send them an email and it's a really pertinent matter, hopefully that's one of the effective ways of communicating. And speaking of emails, I know that throughout the pandemic, my inbox was constantly full. And I know I was sending multiple emails, and different people in my department were as well. And so we wanted to know if we'd sent too many, not enough. And what we did was, with all the different departments at Michigan Department of Community Health, we had one person that was designated to send the email. And in the top of the email, they were to include a list of which listservs or which groups they sent the email to. So we would say if we sent it to our immunization action plan coordinators, or our INEs, or the EPCs, or all the other acronyms there are, you'd put at the top and say who you sent it to try to reduce people receiving the same messages multiple times. And one of the challenges with this was obviously that information was updated very frequently. And in the survey, I asked on the amount of information from MDCH, and about 3/4 said that it was the appropriate amount of information. 19% said it was too much information, and then 4% actually wanted more information. Some additional feedback from the survey. Regardless of our efforts, people still received the same messages from multiple sources. A lot of people said that they would like to have the information before the media, and I know we would have appreciated that as well sometimes. Since H1N1 was the hot topic, a lot of people were involved that had limited experience with vaccines, and then the weekly pandemic partner calls were really an invaluable resource. So I tried to go back to the goals that I had on a couple of the previous slides and go through and look at some of the lessons learned from each of those goals. So in regards to coordinated efforts, it really was critical to have regular meetings early on to ensure that everyone is on the same page. And this, again, can apply to seasonal flu. Just have all the people that are handling flu communication make sure that everybody's on the same page on what messages are going to go out. To have consistent messages and have one place where the most up-to-date information can be found. For us, with the H1N1 provider toolkit, that's where we directed everybody that was offering vaccine. And also to have a review process in place, because you know, there are different people that were involved with the program that weren't typically involved with them. So, you know, we're used to the all the details of immunization that some other people might not pay as much attention to, whether or not it's through 10 years old or younger than 10 or through 9 or that type of detail. Also, timely, helpful, and accurate guidance. I always include date last updated on guidance documents so you know which version you're working with. A couple more take-home messages was to utilize multiple communication channels. And that picture on the right is to show that there were lots of cooks in the H1N1 kitchen. And we really wanted to know who was disseminating what information through what means and to avoid overlap, which I've reiterating from the past slides. Also, to be transparent, be upfront and open as soon as information becomes available. The challenge was that occasionally too much information can lead to more confusion and that plans were frequently modified. I know these are kind of hard to read, but this is to show that we really used feedback throughout to direct educational materials. So the piece on the left is actually a fact sheet on LAIV for healthcare personnel. Because I think it was when, at one of our regional conferences, when a lot of LAIV vaccine became available, one of my bosses, Pat, came back and she said, there were so many questions on healthcare personnel and how to administer LAIV and who can use it. So we really knew that there was a need for information on this. So the first bullets are just facts about LAIV, and then the diagram is how to administer LAIV. And then on the right is an example of a seasonal flu poster that we had that we just tweaked for H1N1. So in summary, some of the successes that we had were the H1N1 really did strengthen partnerships on multiple levels. We engaged new partners, and hopefully this will carry over to future flu vaccination campaigns. We were able to emphasize the critical role of our registry, and we were able to utilize existing programs and communication channels. Applying the lessons learned, it's really important that we come up with maybe a better method for streamlining the dissemination of information, to use feedback to create and modify existing seasonal flu messages in multiple formats to reach diverse audiences, and then to engage new and existing partners to expand our immunization program. And this is going to be really important next year with the universal flu recommendations. And I like to end with a slide on quite a few of my presentations that if you've seen one flu season, you've seen one flu season. Thank you.